RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. I am Jason Floyd. It is Sunday, June the 27th, and this is the interview edition of the MMA Report Podcast, and I have got two fire interviews for you here on this episode. The first conversation you're going to hear is a conversation that I had with Ricky Glenn, who is coming off that win there, quick win there at the UFC Fight Night card there in Las Vegas. Spoke to him about the win, the long road to coming back to this matchup, the injuries, COVID, all of that. And also in this interview, I tweeted about this earlier in the week, that he does is signing a new four-fight deal with the UFC. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Jake Heffernan, who is coming off a win at Fury FC 47, just like Ricky Glenn, a long road back to competition, but his is a much different story, as a hunting accident led to his, the reason why he has been out on the sidelines. If you follow Jake on Instagram, you know exactly what he went through. So a good amount of the conversation I had with Jake, what was about this long road back, and you know, if there was ever a moment that maybe he didn't think that this was ever going to come. So both those interviews come up here on this edition of the podcast. At the end of the show, I'm going to talk about a tweet that came out earlier this week from VADA, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Agency, and I definitely have some feelings on that one. Of course, as always, appreciate everyone who takes time out of the day to download, listen to this episode, also to show their support for the podcast. Of course, on last episode, I talked to you about Manscaped, the great deal they have for my listeners, and they just sent me over some product, and man, just a fabulous product Manscaped offer. So you got to take advantage of that offer that they do have for the MMA Report podcast listener. But let's get right into the interviews. First, you're going to hear my conversation with Ricky Glenn. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's coming off a victory this past weekend. UFC Vegas number 29, Ricky Glenn. Does not take him very long to go out there and get the victory. I know fighters, everyone always say, you visualize a thing 1,000 different ways leading up to the fight. Did you visualize it coming that quick?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I definitely wasn't expecting it to go that quick. Go the distance, you know, I wanted to start a lot faster. Just super, super happy on the victory. And
in terms of the matchup, as you know, as you land those just those short shots, was there a moment of one of those shots when you're like, he's done? Was it the very first left hand?
Yeah, the very first one. I was surprised once he hit the mat, he kind of came back to it. But kind of all in that split second, I gave myself a little talk. It was like, you know, if he doesn't get finished, I'm going to stay on him, and I'm not going to get overzealous, pick my shots, hacking away at it.
You, obviously part of the discussion point with you leading in this fight, first fight since, you know, obviously the end of 2018, you had all the injuries and of course the cancel fight at the end of last year. And you talked a little bit about that rehab from the hip. What was the hardest part of rehab for you?
I'd say the hardest part with the rehab was season back into training. I didn't get back into full MMA training for almost a year after.
In terms of when you were not in full MMA training, was it just kind of just listening to your body more than anything else?
Yeah, listen to my body. You know, working on my weaknesses, work on the mobility. Some little things that I kind of neglected over the years, instead of grinding and pushing the body more. Obviously, the surgery forced that.
Of course, you are back at lightweight for this one. Have we officially closed the door on featherweight? Is that done? No chance you're going back?
No chance. No way. I feel much healthier and happier. And it was stupid for me to continue making that weight. Even, gosh, it was. I think it's back in 2014. I had a really hard time making it. Every time was tough, but it was really hard. And I was like, I need to go up. And everyone around me was like, awesome. Yeah, finally. And then I stayed at 45 for a while. And I used to do the IVs after weigh-ins. And obviously we don't do those anymore with USADA and regulations. So that was tougher. And then my last fight at 45, I missed by 2 pounds, and I said if I ever miss weight, you know, I have to go up. But it was hell making that weight. Now it's still tough, you know, getting to 55. My body's adjusted to a higher weight class, and I walk around a little heavier too. But I'm much healthier, and I knew I was going to perform really good, so I'm not surprised by that. But I was surprised at how much stronger.
You know, because obviously I think when you go up in weight, I think naturally from outside looking in, we're kind of thinking about, you know, how are you strength-wise going to match up with everyone else's division? I mean, did you change anything up in terms of strength and conditioning now being at 55?
A little bit, but I just been consistent, you know, year-round.
You mentioned with Biz being right after a fight's over, you're like, man, I'll get right back in here. Someone wants to come make the walk out. But in terms of a timeline, what is the timeline for your next match?
I'm thinking by end of the summer would be good. I would like to fight, you know, at least 3 or 4 times a year now that I'm healthy again. And actually, they I haven't got it yet, but I got a 4-fight contract. So this was my last one on my contract and a longer future with the UFC.
So how did you celebrate the victory?
Well, right after I had it pre-planned, we got back to the hotel, got our bags, and got dropped off at walked around a bunch. Vegas was crazy. It's probably the busiest I've ever seen. Walked around a ton, a couple guys that hung out and did a lot of walking, and we're all looking forward to getting home. We're all fathers, so it was good to get back home the next day.
Exactly. Awesome. Congratulations on the Vicky, Ricky. As always, I appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything you follow on social media. Anything else we'll mention, man?
Yeah, thank you. Follow me on Instagram at GladiatorMMA. Thanks to my wife and family for all their love and support, friends and teammates, coaches, Absolute Martial Arts and Fitness, Crypto Gracie Academy, Move Well, 7-Second Coaching, Combat Corner. Fall out.
And that was my conversation with Ricky Glenn. I appreciate him coming on the podcast to talk about his win there and his return to the octagon, and you know, give me a little news that it was a final fight on his UFC deal, and he's going to be signing a new 4-fight deal with the UFC. Up next, you're going to hear my conversation with Jake Heffernan, who is coming off a win at Fury FC 47, first matchup for him since 2019 on the sidelines due to a hunting accident. So I spoke to him about his road back to competition and everything else going on in his career. So here's my conversation with Jake Heffernan. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who stepped back inside competition, Fury FC 47. Jake, congratulations on the victory. You had a post on Instagram where it was a long road back. And for those who are not familiar with your story, I mean, obviously, you know, last time we saw you, 2019, last time we had a chance to talk, of course, you know, COVID hit, pandemic hit, you know, we all know it happened regional MMA, but also life away from fighting. You had a hunting accident, and I was reading your post on Instagram where you had talked about when this happened that the doctor initially told you 2 years before you'd be able to move your hand. So, I mean, first off, like, do you remember when the doctor said that to you? Like, what went through your mind?
Yeah, I actually was very much so like unaccepting of him saying that. I was like, no, we're going to cut that time way down because I'm very good at healing. And I just refused to accept that it was going to take that long. And at first my hand was literally like, you know, I could barely wiggle the thumb, but now we're good to go, you know, able to hit all the digits and stuff. At first, it was a little long time. You can see some Instagram posts where I was barely moving each finger a little bit, and then eventually it all came back. Once I could make a fist without having my thumb stick out, that's when I started fight training again.
Like, do you remember, like, when you were able to do that, when you're able to close your fist? Like, was that kind of like, okay, I'm back?
Yeah. It's funny. There's all these little tiny milestones really only myself and Alex Morono and then Matt Wall, my striking coach. And then the guy that was there with us, Graham, which is one of our students, they're the only ones that really understand when I'm like, hey, guys, look what I can do today. And I can, like, snap my fingers. Or the other day we were out eating Thai food, and I had some chopsticks, and I was using the chopsticks. And Alex was like, you can use chopsticks now. He's like, dude, that's so cool. And it's like, you know, between the three of us, it's very, you know, all those little milestones are really nice to hit. Like, I remember probably the 4 or 5 month mark is when my hands started pruning again in the water. Because before, like, because there was no good nerve connection, it wouldn't sense that my hand was getting wet, so my hands would never prune up. And so this, when that finally happened, I was like, dude, my hands prune again in the tub. It was funny.
You mentioned right after the fight's over in a post where you were thanking your sponsors and everything, and you talked about, yeah, you had to get a little ring rust off you. Heading into this matchup, did you think ring rust was real?
Yeah, I definitely knew ring rust was real, mainly because I also started back up with the super fights as well. And so when I with the super fights, it's a lot less, you know, fear and you know, there's not any nerves as much, but still getting in there and like grabbing a hold of the guy and really trying to inflict like damage with submission play. You know, you get that first little rush of like, oh, my arms and shoulders and grips are a little more tired than in regular grappling. And it was the same thing in the fight. I definitely felt the kind of like the gas go out of my feet and legs a little bit. And then when I was punching, I felt like I was throwing the weakest punches ever. So it was just one of those things where I immediately was like, now I remember the fight fatigue and the distance and the footwork needed. And it's definitely going to be a slow road back. That's why in the fight, you see, I'm very patient. I don't really overcommit on anything. I tried to stay as like strict and technical as possible because I did want to battle against any, not just ring rust, but like that, you know, forgetfulness of the fight fatigue, which is just, you can't simulate. So
I've spoke to other fighters about this who, you know, kind of in your same type of position on the regional scene, you know, trying to get those wins to get that big offer. And, you know, 2020 was the year that they couldn't compete because of just that there was no opportunities for them. And I've said, was there something about fight week, fight day, fight night that you didn't realize you miss, but once that week and fight day came, you kind of realized like, man, I missed this.
You know, I guess just being the guy that everyone else is kind of centered on was one thing I kind of enjoyed with my coaches. I had cornered Alex Morono for the last three UFC fights against McKee, Pettis, and then Cerrone. And so I was back in the back in Vegas in the quarantine, you know, hotel, kind of chilling with everybody. And it was really like surreal getting back there and realizing how close the lower level shows are to the highest level show. And, but yeah, I definitely, every time Alex fought, I was like, man, I wish that I could be the guy that's back here. Everyone's kind of like, you know, hey, do this and let's do pad work and let's get a quick little exercise in. And so to be back there and just be like the center of attention for the coaches was really enjoyable. I actually had another teammate on the card as well. So we got to enjoy that together. I also always have enjoyed representing the team flag with one of my other teammates, which was Taylor Hickman, was also on the card on the undercard. And so and he did great, got a TKO in the first round. So team was looking good that night for sure.
So I've talked to fighters about fighting in a empty building. You know, they've described it as a gym fight. When you were in the corner of Alex, what was that like as a coach?
It's one, the Pettis fight was just me and Matt. And so we really got to like coach fully in the Pettis fight. Unfortunately that one didn't go our way. But if you ask Alex, that was literally, he'll say it was one of my most fun fights, like for him. And so cornering, getting to like be on that highest level where every word you say is not just needs to be correct, but you're also getting, you're being recorded the whole time. And so you want to make sure everything you say is correct. So it was a little nerve wracking the first time But then also Safe is there from Fortis. And that man is just a genius when it comes to everything mixed martial arts, and even just the way he coaches, the way he words things. So when he was in the corner, I did my best not to say a word unless he needed my help, which he didn't. So, you know, it was fun on the two occasions that Safe was there to really just enjoy seeing everything, but having no crowd there. I guess the thing I remember most is you can hear every single punch land. Mm-hmm. You can hear every kick. You can hear the footwork. And I think that's something that, you know, and I've cornered many amateur shows and many pro shows for the local scene. And it's like, you're yelling the whole time and the crowd is yelling and everybody's yelling. So you don't really hear all of the noise that of every jab landing or every breath being taken for every punch. And so that was kind of the thing that I remember most in there without the crowd, is that you really do hear every little motion and movement in that cage. And I think that was really cool. And then with the Fury fights, you know, we did get to have the crowd. So, you know, that was almost like another day at the office, if anything, because I've always had the crowds there. So I actually would love to experience the no crowd, because I think it would be a little easier to perform, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard fighters say that. They said, you know, hey, I want to be in that environment. But of course, there in Texas, it's opened up here in my home state of Florida. We're opened up. We've got crowds everywhere. Yeah. I know you mentioned about, like, you know, look, you would have loved going out there and got the stoppage. But was there part of you, part of the mindset leading into this fight of like, look, I haven't fought in 2 years. You know what, let me get some cage time in there to maybe try to get some, you know, whether it's things you're working on in the gym, you know, other things. Maybe it's just like, man, I just got to get the feel of being in the cage once again.
Yeah, actually, my coaches, Matt and Alex, both said like, hey, of course, we always look for the finishes because that does the best for your career. But because you've been out for so long, if you want to get your feet totally soaking wet and just, you know, drag this dude through the deep water because you know you can, and you can do that. Like, you can do pretty much whatever you want in this fight. Obviously, you know, following our initial game plan. But the plan was actually, you know, take him down in the first and grind him out, and then beat him up in the second a little bit and take him down again and grind him out, and then look for the sub in the third. And honestly, that's exactly how it played out. I think that I was a little frustrated at myself after the fight for not throwing as much from the top. Mm-hmm. But also going into the fight, we didn't know that he was a brown belt because we couldn't really find a social media on him. And so his jiu-jitsu was a little more surprising to deal with when I was on top securing position. He actually had like all the right answers to the positions. So every time I thought, all right, I'm comfortable, I'm about to raise up and throw some elbows, he would escape. And in MMA, it's a game of inches. And if I lose that one little bit and then I risk losing, you know, having a loss after 2 years off, I just couldn't risk that. So it was definitely like, you know, I chose to showcase the top level jiu-jitsu and a little less of the ground and pound this time. But that'll definitely be the change we make for the next fight.
Is that one of those things when you go back and you're evaluating your own performance? I mean, obviously you're looking for the pros and cons. Is it more about like, man, an inch here, inch there, I move this way, that way? I mean, is that kind of as you're evaluating how you did, is that kind of how you look at the film?
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm looking at it, I'm, you know, judging his ability to like fight my hips from the ground position. You know, where my footwork lies when I'm striking. Is a big thing, you know, because anyone can throw their hands, but if your feet aren't in the right spot, then it doesn't really matter what you're throwing. We didn't want to kick this fight at all because I was coming off the broken leg from the last fight, and then two, just I have a habit of slipping when I kick. So So we're like, you know what, no kicks this fight, just all hands. I think I threw one inside kick, that was it. But, you know, we really wanted to, you know, make sure everything was – you know, zeroed in. And that was a big part of it, was like, if you make 1 inch to the left, 1 inch to the right, we've experienced, you know, you broke your leg in your last fight, you got knocked out the fight before that. And that was all a game of inches. Mm-hmm. It's not like the guy was, you know, mashing my leg, trying to break it. It just happened. It's the same thing with the knockout. It was just one of those things. My hands could have been a little bit higher. My chin could have been a little more tucked, you know?
You mentioned about like, hey, it would've been great if I would have known this guy was a brown belt. Is that something that, you know, maybe after the fight's over, you went up to him and go, man, like, you know, you're escaping. I was laying all these tricks on you, but you kind of had the solutions, all these tricks.
Yeah, actually, he walked up to us after the fights in the back and you know, just to shake hands and say congratulations, which he was a super, super nice guy, class act. You know, it was an honor to share the cage with him. But that was one of the first things he said. He was like, man, you're strong on the ground. I'm a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. I didn't think he'd throw me like that. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. 'Cause he just, I was like, all the submission attempts, you were just doing all the right things to just narrowly escape. And he was like, yeah, man, that's the one thing. Like, everyone thinks I'm a striker, which I like, but I'm actually also a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. And I was just like, damn, me too. So,
be good to know if I would have known this about 2 weeks ago.
Maybe I would have gone for a little more striking, because I do also feel like I was better in that area. So, you know, it was just one of those things where, looking back, maybe we could have figured out a way to study him more. He actually had his Facebook under a different name, which is why we couldn't find him. So, and that's generally like Facebook is how you do the background checks. So, but you know,
that social media stalking.
Yeah. But we're here now with the victory. So, you know, it went well.
Is there something about the fight that, I mean, obviously you're happy to walk away with the win, you know, all that, but is there something that happened in the fight that you're just like, man, that's what I'm the most proud about?
I guess I've all, you know, ever, especially since I broke my leg in the last fight with Paris Stanford, I took like 6 months of boxing training with my coach, Matthew Wald, and he really just hammered in, you know, how to stand correctly so we don't deal with the leg kick issue ever again, and just kind of keeping my base low so I could add more power to my punches. And I think that every time I stood up, which was not very many times, but every time we were standing, I think my hands and my footwork looked really good. You know, and obviously there's always room to grow. I probably could have moved my head a little bit more, but for what the opponent was presenting, I feel like I moved really well standing, and I think that was the thing that I always try to be the, you know, better at every fight is my stand up, because it would be great to just be able to stand and trade with dudes and knock them out and not have to go to the ground. I instinctually will always probably go to the ground, but you know, I do have a knockout on my record, so maybe I can get another one of those soon. And I'm hoping to, you know, always wanting to, you know, turn to the coaches and be like, you know, hey guys, like, you're the reason that I'm this good. So those wins, you know, when I get those small victories in the fight, those are for them. And so, yeah, I think when I stood up and kind of landed the different shots, especially in the second round, I think that was the thing that kind of made me smile the most. And then, of course, getting out of that guillotine in the beginning, it was never tight, but the dude, like I said, answered every position correctly. So when he was going for the guillotine, it definitely had its chance to get really tight, which is also why I rolled myself to mount to escape, because I knew that I could get out. And because that's Alex Morono's number one submission in the gym, and I'm his main training partner, so I deal with guillotines every day. So I was never in my own head worried about it, but it did look kind of tight. So I'm also glad that I, like, you know, had a cool little showcasing of, like, you know, oh, is Jake going to get tapped? Nah, he's good. Yeah.
So. Do you got a timeline of when you want to get back in there?
You know, for July, we had almost every one of our teammates competing in either kickboxing matches, smoker fights, jiu-jitsu tournaments, or MMA fights. And so August is actually looking like the month that we're going to look to get back into it. I know there was a couple of guys on the card that were also at 45 that think that they might want a shot at the title for Fury. And you know what? I think I'm the best 45er in Texas. So if they want to go, there's a couple of dudes on that card. They know who they are that had victories that night. And so if they want to squabble for that belt, I think August 8th will be the day to do it. So we'll see what they say in the next couple of days. And then hopefully we'll get some fight news in the next like week or so. So hopefully August 8th for Fury.
Awesome, man. Awesome, man. Jake, man, I really appreciate the time. Congratulations on the victory. Of course, let me know anything you find on social media and anything else you want to mention, man.
Just, you know, want to thank everybody again through sticking, you know, with me through the 2 years of the injury. You know, my sponsors, Houston Spine and Rehab, Loaded Pistols, Fightwear, which is the people who do all my shirts and all my cool gear, Bayou City Tattoo Shop, and then Blissful Waters Float Center, which is a sensory deprivation place, which helped a lot for after dealing with getting shot and then healing up and stuff like that. Like if you haven't tried it before, it'll put your mental game in a new spot, especially for mixed martial artists. I always think that's a really important thing. And then beyond that, you know, the small gym sponsors, Vinnie Vincent Real Estate, Sky God Productions. And then, you know, just the gym overall, Alex Morono and Matt Wald for sticking with me and not letting me quit throughout the injury and, you know, pushing me to get to the next level even while on the injured list. So just a big shout out to all of them. And then you can find me on Jake GBTW on Instagram and then Jake GBTW89 on Twitter.
And that was my conversation with Jake Heffernan. I appreciate him coming on the podcast to talk about his win there at Fury FC 47, his long road back, talking about the accident and everything that led to it. Also, very interesting to kind of get his take on being a coach with Alex Morono and being a coach with no fans in attendance, of how that makes interesting. So great stuff there from Jake, and appreciate him coming on the podcast. Also appreciate Ricky Glenn coming on the podcast. Now, before I get out of here on this edition of the MMA Report podcast, do want to mention a trio of tweets that were sent out by the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. Their Twitter is @VADA_testing. So this all happened on Friday. And their first tweet was, organizations like PFL Bellator doing little to curb PED use endangers fighters and contributes to unfair bouts. Out of competition testing needed. Stop relying on absurd excuses and acting as a haven for PED use by turning a blind eye. And they added at ESPN, at Showtime, at CBS Sports, at Scott Coker. Their next tweet was, quote, by most MMA media remaining relatively silent contributes to the problem. UFC never wanted to institute year-long testing, but fans, media, made networks take notice, support fighters who want fair competition and less health risk. And then VADA's final tweet on this was, quote, organizations with all fighters under contract could easily require fighters to undergo out-of-competition testing. Not doing so becomes a license to cheat and unfair to clean athletes. Commissions without resources and afraid to lose events. And they at ESPN MMA, at Scott Coker, at Viacom CBS, at Max Kellerman. I'm not sure why they decided that Max Kellerman was someone that they needed to, you know, quote that tweet at, but they did. And so I saw this tweet, and my tweet was this, quote, the first question on this tweet from Bellator front is, has anyone from VADA testing contacted the commission that has regulated the last months of Bellator events? If the answer is no, why not? That would be the best way to start the conversation. The best way to start the conversation is not by sending out a tweet, because what does that tweet really do? The likely scenario is that tweet does absolutely nothing. If you want to, and look, and whether VADA, and by the way, VADA did not respond to it, which I'm not surprised that they would not respond to that, because, you know, they're, I mean, look, I've never talked to VADA, so I'm not going to sit there, but, you know, it's, look, for organizations that, first off, when we're talking about MMA, if you're a regional promotion, you can't afford drug testing. Now, I know here in my home state of Florida, if there's a title fight, the fighters in the final tight are required to be drug tested. but you know, it's not going to be you saw a level drug test. We know that. But this is the thing. The same regulator has regulated every Bellator event for the last 11 months. And that commission is the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations run by Mike Mazzulli. Here's the question. VADA, did you call Mike Mazzulli? If you didn't, what's that say about you? You can send a tweet out talking about how we need drug testing, but you don't call the regulator that is regulating all these Bellator events. Did you contact New Jersey Athletic Commission? Did you contact Nick Limbo to ask him what kind of drug testing is going on for PFL? I'm just going to say here, my guess on the situation is the answer is no on both of those. Now, I can tell you this. I know drug testing is happening at Bellator events. I know out of competition testing is happening at Bellator events. But, you know, Mike Mazzulli doesn't come out and publicly tell you every time that he drug tests an athlete. If there's a positive test, are we going to hear about it? No doubt we're going to hear about it. But the fact is, like, I look at that tweet and I say, what does that tweet accomplish? What was the tweet trying to accomplish to get MMA media to talk about it? You know, it's just like another one. You know, there was another quote tweet on this one that I saw said, who pissed off VADA today? I mean, look, I'm all about a clean sport. But the fact is, VADA, if you're serious about this and you want to get involved in out of competition drug testing outside of the UFC, there's ways to do this. There's ways to do it. You don't got to send a tweet out. You could sit there, contact the regulators that are regulating these events. And for Bellator, it has been the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations, Mike Mazzulli. If you want to go to, you know, then for PFL, it's New Jersey. Now they're coming, you know, they'll be coming to Florida in August. So, I mean, to me, like, if you want to start the conversation, that's where the conversation starts. It doesn't start via a social media post. And to further that point, okay, if you want to start that conversation, pick up the phone, call Scott Coker. He's not a hard guy to get in touch with. You know, if you don't have his number, I'm sure that there are many ways that you have the ability to contact Scott Coker. VADA, you're in Vegas. Go see Ray Sefo and sit there and have the conversation with Ray Sefo. I mean, look, I think it's, you know, it's one thing to send a tweet, but are you doing anything outside of that tweet to sit there and say, we want to clean this sport? By putting out a tweet trying to say we're trying to clean sport, that's not doing anything. Pick up the phone. Call people who are involved in this. And it's like, as I said in my tweet, is the fact of, if you have not contacted the people regulating these events and asked them what kind of drug testing is going on, what's that say about VADA? What's that say about VADA? I saw that and I just was like, I just shook my head. I'm just like, man, like, pick up the phone and call somebody and sit there and ask them, hey, what's going on here? Are we doing testing? Are we doing out of competition testing? You know, look, it's Scott Coker has made it very clear. You know, they're going to rely on state athletic commissions. And I understand that. Look, would it be great if Bellator brought in a USADA type program? Yeah, it would be. But, you know, there's probably also a financial cost to that. And, you know, and do you want to do that? You know, and I think, that, you know, the other aspect of this, and I know this in talking to state athletic regulators over the years. I mean, look, you just can't go out and ask a fighter to submit to a drug test. They have to be licensed under your commission to be able to do that. So if that fighter is not licensed under your commission, it'd be like, you know, if, you know, John Doe's got a fight here in the state of Florida and the state of Florida, you know, tells him you got 48 hours, go get a drug test, but he's not licensed to be, he's not licensed by the Florida State Boxing Commission. Well, he doesn't have to take the drug test. That's just, you know, that's the way it's always been relayed to me. I mean, look, I want to see more drug testing in the sport, but the reality is, like, you see a tweet like that and you say, okay, like, do you think that magically that tweet is going to change anything? No, you got to get in front of these people. You know, the other thing that I've seen, and I'll leave on this note, is, you know, I see a lot of people in the media talking about commissions, and I understand that, you know, we're not necessarily in a world where maybe some people want to travel, but, you know, look, I'll say this, and I'll be going over at the end of next month to talk to state athletic regulators that are going to be over at the ABC meeting. I'm going to have a round table. You know, right now it looks like it'll be Mike Mazzulli, Andy Foster, and there's one other person that I'm hoping to get in there. I will tell you, another person that I'm looking to get in there is with the Kansas Athletic Commission, because I think they're doing some great things. I don't know if you saw this. I quoted this. I retweeted this tweet on Saturday night, and I thought it was a really interesting tweet, where, because obviously with what happened Saturday at the UFC card with the Tanner Boser fight, where we were sitting there kind of going, did Tanner Boser grab the cage or he not grab the cage? But so this was a tweet on Saturday from the Kansas Athletic Commission. They had a scorecard of a fight that took place at EFC actually on Saturday. And this is the EFC is an organization run by David Rickles. It said, the tweet was this: fight was originally ruled a win for Lee, but it was determined that he used the cage to escape a guillotine attempt. That escape directly led to a fight ending sequence. And because the fight was in the first round, it was deemed a no contest. And I love seeing that from commissions, and Kansas is doing, and they're doing some things. You know, the open scoring system they've done there as well. So Adam Rohrbach, who's a part of that commission, I'm looking to talk to him. But I'll say this, man, if you're in the media and, you know, you want to have real conversations with regulators, it's being at the ABC meeting is a great way, because it's a very open forum where you can sit there and have these long conversations and figure out of how we can make this sport, move, you know, and progress. You know, I think, you know, I've said this for a long time. I think that there's regulators around here that I really question whether they want the sport to evolve, or they want the rules of the sport from 25 years ago to be the rules for the next 80 years. But there are regulators that, to me, want to evolve the sport. I'll tell you, Andy Foster, Mike Mazzulli, Adam Rohrbach, I think those are regulators out there that are trying to evolve this sport. But there are regulators out there that I really question whether or not they do want to evolve this sport. But that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, as always, appreciate you taking time out of your day to download and listen to this episode of the podcast. I will tell you, I'm actually going out of town here starting on Tuesday. So I am going to try to record another episode of the podcast on Monday with myself and Daniel Galvan, leading into the July 4th week holiday. So if we do not have a chance to do a show this week, I hope everyone has a safe celebration of the 4th of July. No major MMA this week, no UFC, no Bellator, no PFL. Kind of weird that we don't have a UFC event on July 4th weekend. We're just so used to having that event, but keep it locked to the MMAreport.com. Of course, a great way to show your support for the podcast is by checking out all the sponsors of this podcast. You can check that out over at the MMAreport.com. Also, another great way to show your support is by leaving a 5-star rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. And do me a favor, if you are not subscribed to MMA Report on YouTube, please do that. I'm putting more and more clips up on the YouTube channel, trying to get that channel to grow. Hit that subscribe, hit that notification bell, where you know a new video is up on the channel. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week on Sundays with the interview edition. And then on Wednesdays, it's myself and Daniel Galvan.